Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for September 1st, 2020. I'm your part-time host, Sean Allen. Our regular host is not available today. And we have four other folks with us today. I'm going to have them go around and introduce themselves so you can be familiar with their voices if you're listening along at home. Joe, could you introduce yourself?
Joe is here.
Gordon.
Hey, I'm Gordon.
Jason.
Hello, I'm Jason.
Theo.
Hi, I'm Theo. Hopefully my mic is okay.
It's doing pretty well there right now. It's much better than earlier. Much, much better. All right. So I'm going to mix this up a little from our usual way of doing things and start with seeing if there's anything that folks want to discuss, because I have two things I want to discuss, but I don't think they'll take that long, and I just want to go ahead and get them out of the way. Anybody have anything they'd like to bring up before we move on to other things? All right, then. So I have two issues, which I brought up in the notes for the sync and Zulip for this. I wanted to go through those and see if there's any objections to them. The first one is to do a probably slow, not particularly quick movement of our Docker image hosting from Docker Hub over to GitHub packages for folks who are listening along at home. If you haven't had a chance to read it, or anybody here is on this, basically Docker Hub changed their terms of service where if you're not logged in, then there's only so many pulls by not logged in users that you can do against a particular image during a period of time. In order to make sure that we avoid that and don't run into any weird problems, this would result in our having to do update a bunch of our systems to make sure that we are logged in, so that everything there is handled in a fashion that would be correct and whatnot for those. But the issues, the some of the stuff in their stuff for their terms is a little confusing. That was part of my takeaway from it. As a process for this, I decided to go take a look and see how GitHub packages Docker hosting has been coming along. They introduced that, I think, like a year ago or something. And I gave it a look, and it's actually really good. And I think, although it would be a bit of work probably for me, I'd probably be the one who does it to switch stuff over, I think in the long run, we'd be better off with GitHub packages, largely because the Docker images would be much more discoverable from the repos that people would be interacting with. So you could see right there on the main page for like PonyC what Docker images are available that are related to this repo as one. And two, there are no constraints, and I doubt there would ever be any constraints based on the fact that it's run by folks who do the CI stuff and everything, for the number of anonymous downloads that you can have during a time period. It's not something I'm be looking to rush into doing, but it would be something I'd roll out gradually, probably over the course of several months. Wanted to see if anybody had any thoughts or opinions on it. Oh, one last thing I would add is that it is also then one less service that we need to use. It's one less thing that core members or anybody else need to be set up with. And it works very nicely with all of the permissions that we already give to people on GitHub. So like if you remember, Joe, when Eric was fixing stuff on Docker Hub, for us, like I think that was like a year ago or something, we had to set him up with permissions just for that. Whereas with GitHub packages, he already would have had those because he was a committer. Anyway, anybody have any concerns?
Sounds right to me.
Yep, I have no concerns.
Cool. The first thing I'm going to do related to this before I really start making any changes is I'm going to put together a document, and I'll share it in the CI channel the CI stream on Zulip. It'll probably take me a while to put it together with a plan of how to switch this over. That might be a little tricky in places because we have a lot of images which build on top of each other. And it's probably going to take a bit of planning to figure it out. So I would post that once I have something and then ask for feedback in case anybody can see anything where I'm overlooking something. That's the first one. The other one is related to last week in Pony automation. This is something that Theo and I have been talking about for a while to take that off his plate. The way that we've pretty much done last week in Pony for at least 2 to 3 years now doesn't really actually need a human involved. It's Theo basically every Sunday copies some stuff out of comments on the website, puts them into something that would go on the blog and puts it up. And what we've been talking about is instead there would be a Last Week in Pony repo where PRs can be opened up against it to add additional content to the forthcoming Last Week in Pony. It would work something kind of like how the release notes bot, which recently went out, worked. And the way that we would actually, what we'd be looking at is as the simplest and easiest way to have this would be is that each Last Week in Pony is actually a release of the content in the repo where it would be tagged. There's a GitHub release that gets created. And if you look in the sync stream for this, you'll see that there's a couple of links for this where you could see what this would look like. And I wanted to get feedback on folks because this would be moving from the website to this to see if folks have any concern with it being done in this fashion. So if you could have a look and see if you haven't already, if you are good with it, that would be good to know. If you have concerns, please let me know now. Should I go ahead? Actually, I'll put the links here in the chat for people who are in this as well. All right. This first link that I'm putting, this is what an individual issue would look like when you're in your browser. And this would be, and the second link I'm putting now is the link to all the releases where I set this up for, basically these are the very first two Last Week in Ponies that were ever done. I set them up to give an example of what this would look like going forward if we did this. So the first link that I put in there is to the link, you know, we basically broadcast every week for a individual release. And then if somebody wanted to see all the different issues / releases, there would be the second link where it's, you know, the standard GitHub format.
No concerns for me.
Gordon, look good?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Cool. I Theo, I know you're good because we'd already gone over this together.
Yep.
All right. That means at some point when I want something really, really, really monotonous and that is unfortunately has just enough variation all the time that can't really be easily automated, I can start moving Last Week in Pony issues like 3 years worth over to the new one. Yay. And then set up the redirects. So that would be the first. My plan for tackling this, the first step would be is to move the vast majority of the old ones over, Theo, right? Have them set up for redirects while you continue doing the regular stuff manually and then working out automating it all. So I would imagine for you, just so you know, Theo, this would be several months from start to finish. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, right? That's what I figured.
Yeah. But, you know, at least step one would be is just getting, you know, most of the old stuff moved over. I did find just even moving these first two over that it's the process of going through moving the stuff over helps formalize better for me how it should really work as we start automating it.
Okay, that's good.
Cool. All right, so those are the two things we had to go over. Let's see. The list of issues for stuff this week. I got the Pony Sync helper working on my machine, opened the PR to it even. So we have a number of things to go over here. Let's see, there's a new issue on contributors. We don't really need to go over that. In case folks aren't aware, there were a couple new additions to the contributors website over the weekend. Let's see, let's start in the Pony C repo. We have a few PRs to go over. Well, not many actually. So we have 3632. This adds pre-built Pony C binaries for Ubuntu 2020. I don't know, Theo, did you have a chance to take a look at this, make sure I didn't mess anything up?
Do you mean 2004?
2004? Yeah, what did I say?
That's what you said, 2020.
2020. Yeah, 2020. I don't know why I would think of those two numbers.
No.
Yeah. But yeah, if somebody could give this a review, and I don't believe I messed anything up. I know that the Dockerfile definitely works for building stuff because I tested it out originally in a PR. So the things to really look at would be in the cirrusci.yaml to make sure that I did actually get the image correct and the other stuff in there. And then that the release notes make sense. Anybody have time right now to take a look at it while we're doing this, and hopefully we can merge it while we move on to the other stuff?
Yeah, I'm looking. I just have a quick question. Mm-hmm. What are you referring to when you say a TZ data prompt from CMake inside of a Docker file?
Oh, yeah. So I don't know what it is, but with the CMake that gets installed with Ubuntu 20.04 inside a...
inside WSL?
Inside WSL, inside the Docker container. When I do this Docker container, without these two environment variables being set, CMake will prompt you to enter your time zone as part of the installation of the CMake package.
What?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
It drove me crazy figuring out how to get that. That's in one of our other Docker files as well, because it's the exact same thing. Oh, for the one where we're currently using it to do the generic glibc builds, it's in that as well. It's exactly the same Docker file right now.
Okay.
Is this good?
Yep.
All right. We'll merge it. So, let's see. Theo, this one really mostly just be for you. 3598. I dropped an idea of what I was going to do with this for a first pass in there. Let's see if it sounds good to you. It would be a listing of any distros that people have run into problems with using the glibc, the generic glibc one, right? With a, hey, this is the thing that you can install using default in order to have this working correctly, right? So like the whichever Linux Mint it is that like Ryan uses, for example, where if you install the 18.04 Ubuntu package, it works fine. It would have, you know, basically a table of here's your distro, here's what your pony up default command that you run should be. Does that sound like a reasonable approach to you for this for now?
Sure. Where would this be located?
This is in the
install.md. Okay.
Yeah, install.md. So it'd be, hey, you want to install it? You go ahead and do these, because we don't have anything right now that'll show you all the distributions, right? Where it can just list them all out. And even if it did, you know, well, I'm using Linux Mint. How do I know which one I'm supposed to do?
It's, you have to match up the Mint versions to the Ubuntu versions or the, or the Manjaro versions to the Arch versions or, you know, something like that.
Yep. Okay. All right. So I can move forward with that. Let's see. Issues on Pony C. We have technically four, but we're going to technically two because that's right. One of them got closed when I merged the thing. Thank you, Gordon, again for that. Let's see. This one is really a note mostly to myself. So just to let folks know, Theo and I have been talking about what goes into the Docker, the glibc Docker image and what we have in our glibc generic build stuff. We've been doing it as the latest Ubuntu, whatever the latest Ubuntu LTS is. The problem with that is that at some point, right, it's going to go from being built on 20.04 to some other Ubuntu, and one night, a nightly might just stop working for you if you're using it already on Ubuntu 20.04, or if you're on anything that was based off of that. So we've merged one where we're going to have an Ubuntu, actual explicit Ubuntu 20.04, one, and the generic glibc one, what we've been talking about, will be based on Arch with just a continual rolling forward of whatever they have with the expectation for a generic glibc one, that this is something that can change out from underneath you at any time, which it could have already. But if we're going to do that, then we decided that we might as well go with one that's actually a rolling release and really build that expectation into it. So we have an issue 36, 33, which is related to that. We also have one here, which is an actual bug. Oh, that's from last week. Never mind. We don't have anything there. That is from last week. So that's it there. Let's see, on the Ponylang website one, issues, we have the last week in Pony, so we can skip that. Oh, Theo, are you ready for lots of Pony up?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. This is probably going to bore other people, but we'll see. So 168 on the Pony up repo. We discussed this earlier. Theo, I think we decided to just kill off the Fedora bootstrapping. Yes?
I believe at some point we did.
Earlier. Well, we never actually completed it then. Are going to remove Fedora bootstrap testing
residue. Sadly, okay. I do not remember our reasoning.
We really need to put these. I'm the one who did the PR. I really should have put it in the. If there was reasoning, I really should have put it in the PR comment because it looked like a mistake. But at this point,
yeah, I mean, I remember having a discussion about it, but I don't remember any of the content of that discussion.
All right, so 167, add sense. Is that the one I want right now? No, add 165. This would be the first one. Add bootstrap testing for 1804, right? Did you approve this, Theo?
Yes.
You did.
I had a question about the max future time stuff, but we went over that earlier this call.
The max future time. Oh yeah, I finally figured out where that's coming from. So I'm gonna fix that.
Oh, okay, great.
You know where it's coming from mostly?
Where?
It's coming from my inability to correctly read the date that the date command spits out at me. Oh. So I will update this one and then merge. All right. Okay. So in that case, so the CentOS one, we should be good with as well. Yeah?
Let me just double check it.
That's 167.
Yep. Yeah, that one also has the max future time thing.
Well, that's because in order to be able to open it to show how it would really work, it's based off of the changes that are in the other one, so it's including those as well. Because I didn't target it at the other branch. I targeted it at master. So that'll go away.
Oh, okay. Because right.
That includes all the Ubuntu stuff. All right. So we have that. We have the Bootstrap. Add Fedora. The FreeBSD stuff. Is there anything for us to discuss on either of the two FreeBSD repos or PRs on PonyUp?
I don't think so. Yeah, where we left off with that is that, I probably need to fix the make file to give a correct version identifier on FreeBSD.
Okay. And then we could do a release to get that up there.
Yeah. That way, in case anyone wants to, contribute to PonyUp on FreeBSD, they're not immediately, blocked by a broken makefile.
And now we know that if there was anybody using PonyUp on FreeBSD, that they probably haven't for the last 2 months when we accidentally broke this because we didn't have the test.
Right.
Bad us. We definitely need to figure out a way so that we can introduce more tests quicker when we add things where it's not dependent upon there being a couple releases or whatever. Because that's basically, I turned this on as soon as we had two releases, but that was 2 months later and we broke stuff in the meantime. So something to figure out. Everything else under PonyUp, the issues is there. That's cool. All right, let's get to the big one. RFC repos, RFC number 182. Jason, this is your RFC for recover blocks with receiver. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I saw this conversation between you and some other folks. Is there anything to discuss or go over for this right now?
There's probably quite a few things to discuss for that. Just if it's the last thing here, then maybe that's fine.
It is the last thing that is in our list. Although when I did ask at the beginning if anybody had anything they want to discuss, Roland had not joined the call. So Roland, hello. Can you introduce yourself real quick? He might not have a mic today. Oh.
Yes, hi. I'm Roland Smith.
Hi. Did you have anything that you wanted to discuss today? Otherwise, we're potentially going to use the rest of the time that we have to the end to talk about this RFC.
I still have some questions, I guess, open still about that string, Unicode string. Okay.
Shall we tackle those first and then get to 182? Does that sound good, Jason?
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Okay. Roland, take it over.
Okay. So I got, some response from folks from the, from reviewing the RFC after I made the updates. The bulk of those came from, from Jason. Joe and Jason. So I'd respond to that. I still had, one outstanding, certainly question about, some of what I think is what Joe had, replied with. Is Joe on the call?
Yes, he is.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm hoping you still remember this, Joe. It was probably like two or 3 weeks ago. But it had to do with a request to make the encoder as a type parameter rather than a runtime parameter.
Yes.
And I did not quite understand how that would how that would work.
So we have, are you familiar in general with type parameters and generics?
I am, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, you said you are, right?
I am, yes, I am.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So the the basic suggestion here was that the methods, I'm trying to go back and look at the code, but the methods that currently take an encoder or decoder, they're currently using this pattern of, if encoder is UTF-8 string encoder,
right,
then take this sort of fast path. Otherwise, actually go through the encoding process. The
conversion thing, right?
Yeah. So my suggestion was that a type parameter could be used in the place of the encoder parameter. So in my example, in that comment, I said I named the type parameter E. It's common for them to have like one letter, capital letter names, for better or for worse. It's common convention. And so the using if type with a type parameter will allow the compiler to know statically what encoding you have chosen, and from there can completely eliminate any code related to even the test of whether it's UTF-8 string encoder or not. It will know statically at compile time whether you're using UTF-8 string encoder or a different encoder, and that would allow you to make that truly zero cost for that case.
So that would be a type parameter though for the method, not for the class.
Yes.
Okay. Do type parameters, are you allowed to default them?
Yes.
So they could still default to UTF-8.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think I understand. I understand that now. Okay. I guess everything else mentioned here, I'm certainly okay with. So I don't know. I mean, I guess the issue there about instead of start using an embed array inside of the string as opposed to having the pointer and the size and the alloc variables like it does now is what's being suggested.
Right.
I guess I'm okay with doing that. Did anybody, know why it wasn't done that way originally? Because there was no reason that couldn't have been done that way, it looks like, from the start. I'm just worried.
Well,
it's not going to work.
We didn't have embed at the start.
Okay.
Embed was a feature added later. So prior to that, it would have been prior to embed being a feature in Pony, if we had taken this approach without using embed, it would have been an extra object allocation within this, an extra pointer indirection.
Right. Yep.
Embed was added
subsequently to the string class being created. Yeah. So we'd probably never put in there.
And okay. just to kind of reiterate the main advantage of this, in the context of this PR, if we're trying to take away in general, the bytewise methods from string, then we need to retain, we need to have a very efficient conversion between string and byte array. Ideally, the way we talked about with embed, this was Jason's idea, the embed and changing the signature of funval array, as mentioned, that second bullet point there, would make this a zero cost conversion between the string and an array of bytes.
Okay. Okay, good. And then I guess the next item there with, trying to have equivalent functions in arrays or in string, that makes sense. It looks like a lot of them are actually there already, but I will go through and diff the two classes and see what's missing from array.
Yeah, and just in case it wasn't clear from my description, if there's stuff that needs to be specific to an array of U8 as opposed to arrays of other things,
right.
We have examples of how to do that. For example, there is the read U8 method that only works on an array of U8, and it uses type parameters with defaults in order to do that. So it's a little bit of type parameter magic that would prevent you from calling that method on anything but an array of U8. And then within the method, the type system knows that A is a subtype of U8.
Okay. All right, I think that's the only question I had. So I will make another, I'll make another set of changes to the RFC and let everybody know when those are done, and maybe next week. So at some point there'll be, I guess, approval for the RFC, and then I'll go off and try to finish the actual development work. Just let me ask that there were no issues with the changes to the there were some changes to C code and character literals. Is that everybody okay with those changes, or they weren't?
Let me take a closer look at that, just because you brought it up. I don't think I reviewed that in depth. Okay. So let me take a look at the diff.
I can give a quick sort of background. It was just the idea was that character literals currently can be multiple bytes, up to, I guess, whatever would fit, maybe in an unsigned 128, I guess, I think. This change was to make them, since they're now, could be multiple, they're basically UTF-8 set of characters, to make character literals a single character, possibly multiple bytes, but a single character.
Okay. In general, yeah, that sounds, I haven't found the code yet in the diff that does that, but yes, that sounds like the appropriate thing to do to me.
Okay, good. That's all I have.
All right, well, Jason, you want to take it back to the other RFC?
Sure. So for the most part, there's sort of two big pieces to talk about, or two like major details on. So first of all, explaining what it is and what the use cases are. And I think maybe there's not too much to talk about there. It's just kind of something to read. And the second bit is that soundness issue, or kind of the discussion of how we handle the environment. Because Joe made a comment in there, which I don't know if it was intentionally calling back to the discussion we had on the non-ephemeral match, but there's a similar issue where it's,
yeah,
sometimes you want to have a temporary, like ISO or TRAN, not the hat versions, but the temporary alias versions. Sometimes you want to put those in a variable. And the thing is, if you can mutate that environment, there's a host of ways to basically invalidate that and cause soundness problems. And so I didn't want to edit the RFC immediately to kind of slow things down before talking, but I think the direction to go in is to say that the environment is read-only and still maintaining isolation. So there's a lot of edge cases, especially because you can alias access to something which is ISO and thereby consume it from one area and while it's still aliased. That was a lot of words.
I mean, the one thing that comes to mind to me, I guess I felt the same way with the match issue, that dealing with a temporary or ephemeral ISO or TRAN is not, how's the best way to say that? Like, it doesn't seem super common, or rather, like, it's like, I'm just wondering, you know, if we're going to talk more about the use cases for this RFC, you know, maybe we can try to figure out how many of those potentially include this temporary issue. And if so, we can go the other direction potentially of like disallowing that use, and then not having to deal with the extra restrictions on the environment. Unless we want to say the extra restrictions on the environment are conditional on only when temporaries are involved, in which case, like, that might be okay.
Yeah, that was my thought. It's okay. Basically enforcing this sort of so at least seems related to me to the single active temporary rule that you see in the theory. So Yeah, anywhere that you have this temporary where you're sort of extending its lifetime, like you're giving it a name, then you have to follow this rule where you can't mutate the environment without moving it in, without like consuming it. And then recovery blocks independently are always isolated. But this does make this into like the confusing intersection of, well, if we want to support this case where we can use an ISO temporarily as a ref, then we have to basically have like the intersection of both of those.
Yeah, and that level of confusion, I guess, has to be kept in mind for the user, because this is probably getting into fairly esoteric territory.
It's on one hand, it's like, it feels theoretically esoteric, but there's a number of practical issues. And even in the cases, like in this case, you can work around it a good chunk of the time, but usually those are workarounds. So you have to compromise a performance because you're doing like assigning, putting things back into place or whatever, or there's extra complexity. And even for the sake of like a single variable where you can do it, you have to do this whole, you have to play Indiana Jones, you have to put something back in there, then consume it inside the recover block, and then return it again out the other side, as opposed to being able to use it without like with the extra syntax sugar.
So yeah. it's sort of. I've definitely had that Indiana Jones feeling before, so I'm sure others have too. Any Sean, Gordon, Theo, any sort of initial thoughts or questions about this? Like, I could get into some more details on this, but I want to make sure that everyone's kind of on a level of having a general understanding of what this is for before we kind of get deeper.
Yeah, I do. I left the comment a couple of minutes ago, right? My first reactions were, I'm not a huge fan of the syntax, but I do think that what this is trying to accomplish is a good thing. It addresses something which is a pain point that I think we've seen come up for a number of people who are coming in who are trying to do stuff with Pony, right? Where ISOs, particularly in the case, like a couple of the examples that Jason gave, are difficult or hard for people to figure out how to work with, and it would be nice to give them a better way, as Jason said. In terms of like what's safe and what not to do with some of this recovery stuff, Joe, you've thought about it a lot more than me, and I would mostly defer to you on that, although I will also think about it, but you know, in the end, it'd be like, if Joe says it's safe and I can't see anything, then I'm going to assume that it's safe, because you've just in general thought about a lot more in this space than I have.
So one potential alternative line of thinking that I wanted to introduce kind of for folks, including Jason here, mm-hmm. is, I mean, I think Jason, we've talked about this a little bit as well, like one-on-one, but the, in Verona and in some of the thinking that, Paul Liotard shared on a thread, you know, several years ago, I think some of the thinking that probably led into Verona, there's this idea of, all I say is talk about it in the sense of how Verona works now, right? So in Verona now, there's this idea where any ISO object is sort of like a root of ownership. In Pony right now, we kind of have actors as a root of ownership. And ISO is not really a runtime construct so much. It kind of is with garbage collection, but not so much. And in Verona, it's like essentially every ref that you might want to allocate has to be within the context of what might be considered an ISO. There's this other way of thinking about this kind of problem in general, which I want to explore a little bit, which is that like, if I have an ISO that I want to interact with some refs, Can I like introduce a stipulation into the type system where those refs are in the same like isolated region as the ISO, or they sort of belong to the ISO, and the type system kind of tracks that this ref is in a separate isolated region from this other ref, and that this ref happens to be in the same isolated region as this ISO. Things like that would constrain that either two references are known to be in the same region as each other, or they're known to not be in the same region as each other, or it's like indistinct, in which case you have to treat them the most conservative approach. And I'm wondering if that kind of approach might be a better way or a more general way to deal with some of these issues that we run into with gymnastics around ISO and TRAM.
So can I say that in a slightly different way, Joe?
Yes.
Okay. So I hear you saying that you think that the Verona approach to having different regions for memory and having the type system interact with it is a approach that we should look at and consider adopting that approach in general in Pony. Yes? No?
Sort of. I would say sort of.
Sort of. Okay. Can you explain?
Yeah. I mean, in general, I don't think that we necessarily want to go full or exact Verona semantics, but this is sort of along the lines. Again, I think this is thinking that Paul shared, and we discussed a little bit in that GitHub thread, which I can find a link to eventually here once I stop talking. But there's a GitHub thread. We talked a little about this and some of the thinking that led into Verona, which is basically the idea of tracking. I'm not trying to suggest large sweeping changes to the way Pony allocations or type system stuff works, but I am trying to suggest adding additional data that you can give in some syntactical form that would allow you to tell the compiler, hey, I know this ref is in a separate isolated region from this ref. And so therefore, the compiler can make can check safety with additional information about the isolatedness or non-isolatedness of two references. My hope is that in general, most Pony programs would not need to change with a change such as that, but that new programs would become possible by adding this additional syntax or additional metadata that would allow you to tag them as being of a distinct or of a same region. And if you use that extra syntax, you can now do things that you could not do before. But the goal would be that the rest of Pony code continued the same semantics it had before, continues compiling, et cetera.
So my apologies for people who don't know Verona, but so to make sure I understand you, Joe, what you're really saying is that we wouldn't expose ideas that Verona has, like being able to have different memory allocators, being able to explicitly say which like region you're going to allocate stuff into, where there might be different allocation and collection strategies and whatnot, but in just focus on the, is this in the same region, which I believe for Pony would mostly, I don't quite know how that would map to, so I guess for this, when we map, now going back over to Ponylandism, this would be like, okay, so the initial region for something is for the actor which allocated it, right? And then if I consume, and then if it's consumed,
I would expect a recover block to create like within the recover block, you're now saying this is a new region that is proven to be distinct, right? Because the recover semantics,
okay,
currently prove that the things created within that recover block are isolated from the things outside of it, and they are in the same region as each other, right? So we kind of have this implicit tagging of region based on recover blocks, but then we could introduce like an explicit tagging of region and saying this ref is distinct from this ref, or this ref is the same as this ref. I have not thought this all the way through in case that was not obvious, but I do want to, this is something that I really want to explore as maybe an alternative path toward making these things possible in a way that I hope is less, making more things possible without a ton of extra syntax to make it happen.
I'm interested in exploring it, but I was also interested in starting up a conversation with you at some point, Joe, about what our appetite would be to consider larger Verona-like region and allocator, et cetera, type things for the future.
Yeah. And that's one reason I bring it up now, right? Because if we have possibly these two different options of how to make these things possible, and one of them brings us into a space that is more Verona-like and the other one doesn't necessarily get us any closer nor further away, I might want to consider the one that brings us into being more Verona-like.
I would agree with that statement.
Yeah, there is a major complication when talking about the allocation and the existence of tag refs or tag pointers, I would imagine.
Oh, yes. Verona has no tag pointers. That's gone. There are a lot of similarities in the reference capabilities that Verona has versus Pony, but there is no tag. Tag had to go away because of those changes. Yeah.
See, I'm not sure how much of a difference that makes to us from a Pony semantics perspective, because this is possibly naive, but you know, could we just tell the Verona runtime that it's one of the other capabilities, but in the type system, we restrict the user. We add the additional restrictions of tag.
That I haven't thought about at all.
I mean, that might be a problem if you want to hold an identity. Like if you're using it for the purposes of identity, if you're holding a reference to something that's in an isolated region.
Yeah. So in that case, I just like from a Verona runtime perspective, does the Verona runtime care if you have this like type system? I mean, I think the Verona would consider it to be like a type system bug, right? If you're holding this reference to something in another isolated region, that I guess is not frozen, right? It's not a frozen reference, and it's not.
It also has implications of that, that identity has to be stable, and it can't be necessarily pointer stability, at least with the current implementation, because you know that region might go away.
Okay. So yeah, that makes sense. So basically, we'd be removing the way I was kind of treating it, I guess, in my thinking was like we'd be removing this idea of tag as a, you know, GC prevention identity, but you'd be holding on to, like actor references, which is the most common use case for tag, yes. Becomes like a cone, right? And you have that cone reference from the outside.
Yeah, if you limit it to that, it would definitely work. There might be a way, at least for like the purposes of runtime correctness, you could, because Verona does have this concept of weak refs, which do keep an object alive. Actually, I'll have to think.
Isn't it like the opposite of a weak ref?
No, because it in terms of the runtime, it keeps the object stub alive. Therefore, the address would remain valid because nothing would be allocated in that region. But the object, from the purpose of using it, will be dead. But that's fine for the purpose of tag, right? If you're using it as identity.
Okay. Yeah. So there's some possible workarounds for tag. But it's not a super common use case anyway. It's largely for keeping something alive for an FFI, right?
Right, yeah. I think it's definitely doable, you know, I put that with a big asterisk of, you know, haven't thought about it that much. But, you know, so long as you provide a stable identity, that's not necessarily, you know, a pointer, it's probably fine. Or it could probably be done, but it just may be expensive.
Yeah, so this is sidetracked a little bit from the original RFC.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, just to kind of, you know, the main point I was trying to make earlier is that this idea of saying, maybe basically in that discussion with Paul, in that thread, which I can pull up for reference for those interested, you know, he was suggesting the syntax of saying, you know, you could add a number onto reference capabilities to tell you which region it came from, and regions with the same number in a function are treated as being the same region. One syntax variation on that I was interested in exploring was using, like, you have like ref and ref prime to know that these are refs that cannot touch each other, and the type system could take that into account and all that stuff to enable you to, for example, like this was a use case that I've had quite a bit, which is I have a function that needs to receive two arguments, and it wants to make changes to both of them, right? You have these two mutable objects, and it wants to make changes to object A and object B, and there's, you know, reasons why it should be in one method rather than two calls, and like being able to tell the type system these refs will never touch each other within the function as part of the signature of the function. And outside of that, it can now see, okay, well, I can pass in this ref from inside the recover block, as well as this ref from outside the recover block, and know that that when they come out the other side, they will have never touched, except for, you know, sendable things going back and forth between them. So that's kind of the area of use case that I've seen come up most often from my perspective. I know there's others that people have, like iterating on an ISO and things like that, that we could explore.
There's some amount of difficulty in that the talking about whether they never touch each other is a very, very broad notion, because it's not just, because if they have their own so one of the issues that came up here is we might have two separate refs that look like they don't touch, but they could point to the same ISO somewhere down the line, and that could cause issues. So ironing what that means and whether it's going to handle this use case might be a bit tough, and you might end up with a very coarse relation.
What do you mean by somewhere down the line they point to the same ISO? You mean within the like nested fields of them?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think that would be prevented by that would be prevented by the type system, you know, guarantee at the caller side would say, okay, the part of the restriction of calling this function is that these two arguments come from different isolated regions. And so isolation must have been kept up until that point. And so they should not, and that isolation would be maintained within the function as well. So it should be preserved.
Right. I think I got things a bit like twisted as far as thinking about what the function could do.
I certainly didn't mean to throw a wrench into the RFC. I mean, I think this is a great point of discussion. That's just an area of exploration I wanted to think about before we get too far down this road.
That's fair. I think we can. So maybe one option for now is to push this onto the stack and handle some of these other smaller cases. So the non-ephemeral match still needs to kind of have its own solution. We need to figure something out with that. And then there's like the, I need to go make a small thing for the viewpoint adaptation bit. So we do that a bit weird on recovery, automatic recovery.
Yeah. I think we should. I would love to talk about this more, but unfortunately I have a hard stop here at the end of the hour.
So let's say that for whoever is running this next week, if it's me or Andy, let's start with this next week. Does that sound good? And see if we have any new or additional thoughts on it, Ben.
Cool.
That's sensible. I think we should write something down about that so we actually think about it and then don't forget it for 7 days. And
write down, you mean, like, what do you mean by write down?
Hey, maybe, I don't know. You did leave a comment on there, so.
Yeah, okay, so I can,
I think that's fine.
I want to make sure that we discuss this first at next. I think we made some progress on discussion. Ground issue. I'm going to leave a comment and you tell me if you think it's good enough.
Most likely.
Okay. Comment left. Jason, do you feel good with that one?
Yeah, that's fine.
Cool. All right. Well, in that case, Joe is, oh, I was going to say, Joe, I know you have to go, but Joe's already gone. All right, everyone. Thank you for coming. That was great. Ones where we deal with RFCs are usually my favorite ones anyway. So, awesome. All right, I'm going to stop recording now, and thank you.